In this podcast, we will be talking with Carrie Starr, the co-owner of Cherokee Valley Bison Ranch.
Hi, I'm Carrie Starr with Cherokee Valley Bison Ranch. I grew up here on our farm where we live. This was originally my grandmother's farm, and she brought us up in a way to respect the land, and she never allowed the use of any herbicides or pesticides on the farm when I was a kid, and that really made an impact. I went to school to be an environmental science person. Studied environmental science at what's now Zane State College. And I worked in several water quality labs after college. And then I always kind of had this urge to have farming in my life in one way or another. And in 2008, my husband Jared and I bought a herd of bison.
But then before that, you tried other things, didn't you, as a farmer?
Actually, I tried bison first.
Oh, you did? You just jumped right in.
Oh, I did. I jumped right in.
Okay, well, tell us the story of how that happened.
Well, I had been reading about bison for a couple of years, and Jared and I had decided that we were going to start small with just a few calves, you know.
Mm-hmm. But tell me about when you ate bison meat.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that sort of when it started?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tried bison for the first time at Ted's Montana Grill in Columbus, and I thought that was the most amazing thing that I'd ever eaten, and I thought, oh, I'd like to be able to eat this all the time. And then that's when the light bulb went off that, hey, I live in the middle of 25 acres, I could raise bison. And of course, I never really thought it would happen. It was just kind of one of those things I would do, you know, read about bison, and it was a sort of a distraction from real life, and I never really thought it would happen. And then when I met Jared and told him about my idea, he was on board with it, so I kind of knew then that I'd met the right guy. He was just as crazy as I was. So like I said, we were going to start small with just a few, and then one Sunday Jared was perusing the Columbus Dispatch and found an ad for a herd of bison. So we decided to go and just look at the bison. We'd never seen bison up close and personal. We'd never talked with a bison farmer. So we wanted to go and pick the guy's brain and kind of find out what we needed to know to have our own bison. Well, he told us that the whole herd was going to go to the processor if no one bought them. So he was pretty much done trying to advertise, and he was just going to send them all to the processor. And he had this beautiful bull. His name was Charlie, and it was like love at first sight. Charlie was your picture-perfect buffalo. He had the big woolly mane. He looked like the buffalo on the back of the nickel. And so on the way home, it was like, we can't let Charlie go to the processor. So we bought a herd of 14 bison. The only sticking point with that was we didn't have any fencing. We didn't have a truck. We didn't have a barn. So we kind of jumped right in, and it was sink or swim. So within 6 weeks, we had built one pasture and had all of our bison home. So it was kind of a rude awakening, or yeah.
I don't know what it is about people and livestock, but this is how lots of people get into goat herding. They just see the goats and they're like, okay, I'm bringing it home. And they aren't ready. And I don't think you can just bring home bison, though.
No. Luckily, the guy agreed to keep them at his farm until we could get some fencing built here. So we did have a little bit of time to prepare physically. Mentally, it was just kind of like, whoa, there it is.
So you've had this dream, and you didn't think it would ever happen.
No.
Then you've got a partner in your life who's supporting your dream. So that's the first piece everybody's got to have, whether it's a marriage partner or people in your life that support you,
right,
your dreams. But then what was it like when those bison, when you heard that truck coming with the first part of the bison herd?
It was it made my heart pound. We were standing outside. We knew that the delivery was coming, and I heard him coming across the hill up there, and you know, we kind of got a dirt road, and I could hear the trailer bouncing on the road, and it was just the sound of that just got me really excited. And you know, you begin questioning yourself, is my fence is going to work? Is it going to hold these bison in? And he backed down, and we opened the gate at the far end of the pasture, and they came running out of the trailer, and they just ran laps around the field over and over until their tongues were hanging out. And it made me feel really great, because where they came from, they didn't have a lot of room. So it was like, yay, we did it.
Well, realizing your dream is powerful.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. And that was all I could think about, getting all those bison home, especially Charlie, because, you know, he was the big guy, and he was kind of the one that we fell in love with to begin with. Mm-hmm.
So, but then bison require a lot of different strategies and so forth to actually make money. And so what else did you do to sustain yourself and actually become a full-time farmer?
Well, we kind of became collectors, and trying on a bunch of different hats, you know, what we were going to do to make money on the farm, until the bison business became self-sustaining. So initially I still worked, and then we found a bison burger business that we bought, and we were going to hit the road and do all these fairs and festivals. And so I quit my job to do that. But it turned out that the fair and festival market had pretty much been tapped. The people who were organizing these events were charging a lot of money to the vendors. So I really didn't make any money doing it. So I thought, well, if I'm not going to make any money, I'm just going to stay home. I can stay home and not make any money. So that was sort of what spawned me to start other ideas. And we had goats, so we got goats, and we got chickens.
What did you do with goats?
Well, initially we got a couple of pygmy goats for Abby to do a 4-H project, and she quickly lost interest in that. But it was sort of the segue into milk goats, because pretty much my whole life I wanted to have dairy goats. I wanted to have a source of raw milk for our family. I had goats when I was a kid. My grandpa had goats, and I had the fond memories of goats on the farm and goats when I was a kid. But so anyway, I wanted to have dairy goats. That was my goal. So we kind of got used to having goats with the little pygmy goats that didn't require milking and things like that. And then eventually we purchased a dairy goat, an Alpine, and then we purchased a couple more goats. And
how did you make money from that?
Well, mainly just selling the offspring was our money maker. I also did farm camp. I had, that was sort of a lean time in our life. Jared and I were both unemployed. The plan was for Jared to keep his job and I was gonna stay home, but he got laid off due to the downturn in the market. So we were both at home, and we needed a way to sort of fill in the wage gap there. So I did farm camp, which was essentially like babysitting. And so I had these kids come out, and they would milk the goats, and they would brush the goats, and the goats were part of it, and we would take walks around the farm and that kind of thing. But so they were kind of an attraction. The kids loved the goats, so. And then, yeah, like I said, the offspring, and then we ate cheese and ice cream and drank the milk and things like that.
So what made you decide to get out of the goat herding business?
Well, you know, one goat is great, so lots of goats are better, right? Well, that didn't turn out to be the case. People kept giving us goats, and we bought goats, and so people aren't giving away like prize goats. They're going to give you the troublemaker. They're going to, you know, you're not going to find really great deals on really great goats. Generally, people are getting rid of livestock cheaply for a reason. But those were lessons we were still learning. So I ended up with the demon seed of the goat world, who did not want to stay contained, and she was constantly jumping out of her pen. I don't know if she had like springs inside of her feet or what, but I could not keep her contained, and then she sort of spoiled the rest of them and taught them how to get out. And so on a daily basis, I was chasing goats half the day. We weren't drinking the milk. Abby didn't like the milk. You know, it was, I'm sure it was just all in her mind because it really didn't taste any different than cow's milk to me, but she didn't want to drink it. I didn't have time to make cheese. I didn't have time to make soap. I didn't have time to make ice cream. Because I was busy trying to get other things going, like pigs and chickens and turkeys. And so it just ended up being the thing that got the least amount of attention. So I was chasing goats for no reason, and I finally decided that that was the thing that had to go.
Mm-hmm. So, it might have really developed your cussing vocabulary.
Yes, there. Yes. There's probably still a cloud of cuss words hanging over the farm from all of the times I cursed at those goats for getting out. The problem is that we were trying to keep goats in bison fencing. We were a bison farm, so I didn't want to invest the money in the proper kind of fence for a goat, which would be like what you have at your house, the woven wire fence. So yeah, that was pretty much why we decided to get out of it.
Well, but how much money could you really have made, too? I guess that's the other challenge.
Yeah. You know, I look back now and think, well, there were, you know, I could have maybe developed a soap market, or, you know, there's people that use goats to go out and clear weeds and things like that as a business.
Or meat.
Or
you don't
for
have
meat.
To have a meat goat to have meat.
Right, right. You know, mm-hmm. the little boys are often a challenge to rehome because they don't have a lot of purpose. If you're not gonna use them for breeding, then
mm-hmm.
yeah. But yeah, I just I couldn't really see my way to make a living with the goats. So yeah.
So you moved on to other livestock.
Yes.
And what do you think was the worst experience you had in raising goats?
Just the constant getting out and chasing, because goats are ornery, and they love to be chased. And so...
Or they loved you chasing them.
Yes, yes. And that was the thing when I was a kid, too, because, you know, my grandpa gave us the goats, and I thought it was wonderful to have goats at home, but the goats constantly got out because we didn't have, like, electric around the top, so they were just constantly getting out. And my dad got really mad at the goats, and... he also said lots of bad words. That's probably where I learned my learned all
your vocabulary.
Yes.
So what's your favorite story? Your favorite goat story? Well, you know what? Just from the look on your face, it's like, no, that's why I don't have goats, because there was no favorite goat story.
No, but I can tell you my favorite part about goats is having the babies in the spring, you know, because they are so adorable. And their little soft noses. And, you know, Jared and I would go down and spend all kinds of time with them. And I'd sit on a bucket and they would jump up on my lap and go to sleep. And, mm-hmm. you know, that was my favorite part. But that really only happened for a short window before they were ornery and jumping out and doing bad things and making me say bad words. So
so off they go. So do you have a favorite tool that you use on the farm, or that you used when you were goat herding?
Well, my favorite tool would have been that cart that I have, because it's really handy for mucking out stalls and things like that. And unlike a wheelbarrow that has just one wheel on the front, it's got the two wheels in the back, so it's easy to push and easy to get rid of those piles of manure.
And you think that's good for particularly women, or as far as upper body strength?
Yeah, I would say, yeah, because mm-hmm. it's kind of well balanced where the wheels are placed. It's not at the front, so you have to lift all that weight up. It's in the center, so you can just kind of lift it up a little bit, and if you're going downhill, it does the work.
That's great. So what do you think is the best advice you ever received?
The best advice was don't be afraid to try. And you know, we tried goats and it just didn't work out. But we tried, so now we know. And I encourage people to try. I encourage people to do research before they do, though. Trying something doesn't necessarily mean going into it blindly, but yeah, that would be the best advice is, you know, and it doesn't have to be perfect. You know, a lot of people don't ever attempt their dreams because they think they have to have, you know, the TSC goat house or the TSC chicken coop or whatever. You know, you can make do and, you know, turn an old dog house into a coop or turn an old dog house into a, not a small dog. You know, you wouldn't want like a Pomeranian dog house, but I'm thinking of the dogs we have. So, you know, they make good, a good little shelter that you could put down to pasture for a goat. But, yeah.
Okay. That's great. Thanks to Carrie Starr for sharing her ideas and expertise. Technical assistance and photography is provided by Kat Harrier and Devin Kennedy. This program is a part of a collaboration between Rural Action and NCSER Research and Education. In future podcasts, we'll be interviewing a variety of people who are connected to the specialty dairy product industry, plus talk about how to make a living by supplementing a dairy business with other products produced by the animal. Marketing, branding, animal welfare, standards and regulations, and more will be covered in upcoming podcasts. For more information, visit www.ruralaction.org. Copyright 2018 by Rural Action and Blue Rock Station, LLC.